Hello, thank you for joining us today. My name is Kayla Verhoeven, and today is Thursday, June 25th. We're going to go ahead and start off with some Bloomington normal sports, the corn crib where the baseball grows. There it shows a picture with a mother and her son, and it says Val Higbee enjoys time with her four-year-old son, Will, on Friday, June the 19th of 2026, on the grassy hill just beyond the outfield wall of Normal's corn crib at 1000 West Rab Road. Fans, players share love of game close up at venue. By G. Jack Alkire. Normal. Last Friday, Val Higbee sat on a blanket with her four-year-old son, Will, on the grassy hill just behind the outfield wall of Normal's corn crib, taking in a corn belter's game. She and her husband are both teachers, so we all have summer to figure out what we're going to do together, which is a challenge sometimes, Higbee said, as Will struggled to sit still and jumped about. But I mean, it's really a luxury as well. On nights that we're doing nothing, where you could just sit and watch a movie, which is great too, we can drive a few minutes and be at a ball game and stay for a few innings before bedtime. On most evenings from late May through early August, later if the Corn Belters make the playoffs, families and baseball fans alike have the chance to slow down, get up close, and enjoy personal with America's pastime, and enjoy some competitive baseball at the Corn Crib, located at 1000 West Rad Road in Normal. The community is lucky to have a place like this, said Brad Gulley, who brought his 8-year-old Jace to the park that evening. For the value of it and everything, and having different theme nights that they have to go along with it, the kids get really excited. Jace, for his part, was looking for some loud lumber since his favorite thing about the ballpark is watching people hit home runs, he said. That's what it's all about, said Jarrett Rogers, general manager at the Corn Crib. It's about falling in love with the game, and you don't always get that experience at a bigger stadium in a Major League Baseball. So really, we want the fans to have access to the players, and we want them to be able to get autographs, high fives, and to be this close to the game. Can't beat it. The Corn Belters, play in the Prospect League, a summer baseball league for college players continuing to hone their skills. Games last 9 innings. The diamond is the same dimensions as those in minor and major leagues, and teams hit with wooden bats. But when the team is playing away games, there is still baseball at the Corn Crib with the Colonel Collegiate League, or the KCL. The KCL is a summer collegiate league with 4 teams operated by the Corn Belters organization. They play 7-inning doubleheaders when the parent team is out of town, and fans can get access to every game with season memberships, Rogers said. All 4 teams, the Blue Caps, Bobcats, Ground Sloths, and Prairie Flamingos, stay in Normal when the Corn Belters travel. In 2021, Corn Belters leaders announced a campaign called Hashtag Where Baseball Grows, paying tribute to the stadium's name and the KCL's role in developing baseball in Central Illinois. $70 gets you into every single one of our games. Corn Belters and KCL for one person, he said. And we have upgrades as well. You can do add-ons, but we structure it as a membership rather than a season ticket. Amber and Steve Crowley have been members for 2 seasons now. You also get a free hockey ticket, Amber Crowley said. There's all kinds of perks in it. I mean, you really can't beat it, and it's competitive baseball. They're not just out there dilly-dallying. Players that aren't in the lineup for that day, though, can be found interacting with young fans from the dugout, said Shelby Hibbins, director of fun and fan engagement at the Corn Crib. They'll talk to them from the dugout, they'll throw them balls, they'll talk about their day, she said. Kids will throw them their sweatshirts. It's cute to watch. Even though they don't have kids, the Crawleys still enjoy that, Amber Crowley said. It's cool to see the little kids idolize them. Like one of the players was just walking down there, she said, pointing down at the right field concourse, and they just surrounded him. Can I get your autograph? You know how special that must feel for these guys? Back beyond the outfield, 12-year-old Colton Byrne was hoping to catch a long ball and take it home to Fort Worth, Texas. He was visiting his grandparents in Bloomington. "It's really great to have the opportunity to be this close," said Mike Nichols, Colton's granddad. "He was able to go right up to the fence and hopefully catch a ball. And even seeing how fast the balls are thrown, because at this level it's a little different than his little league." Not a bad spot. Even when they're not mobbing baseball players, there is always something for kids to do, Hibbins said. Like a prize wheel in the main concourse, mascot Corny touring the stands, and even between inning mini games. 9-year-old Kinley Moffitt and her cousins were chosen for a quote-unquote find it challenge behind the Corn Belters dugout to uncover the hiding places of three objects with the help of the audience after the second inning. "It was amazing to be picked out of all these people, and we found them, and that is what we had people to help us," Kinley said. Friday was the first time she and her father, Shane Moffitt, had been to a ball game in the corn crib. "There's not a bad seat in the house wherever you go and wherever you sit. They've got bleachers all the way around here. And then we would have brought blankets if we would have thought about it to be able to sit up in the grass and watch the game. I mean, it's a lot of good space. They did a good job designing the park," Moffitt said. For Moffitt's brother-in-law, Jeff Nizwecki, of Gridley, seeing the Corn Belters up close inspired him to get closer to the game, he said. "It makes me want to play baseball again. I haven't played baseball since high school, and as an adult, it's like City Rec softball leagues, that type of stuff, but not actual baseball. I miss playing actual baseball." For more information about season memberships, schedules, and prizes for the Corn Belters, you can visit cornbeltersbaseball.com or you can call 309-454-2255. Once again, for more information about season memberships, schedules, and prices for the Corn Belters, you can visit cornbeltersbaseball.com or call 309-454-2255. Moving on now to some other news. Trump cancels housing bill okay. President demands voting legislation first, by David Morgan with Reuters 2 hours ago. Politics. Washington. President Donald Trump canceled his plan to sign a bipartisan affordable housing bill Wednesday to pressure his fellow Republicans to pass a long-stalled package of U.S. national voting restrictions that has aggravated party fissures and shown the limits of his power. Trump said he would join Senate Republicans at a closed-door lunch Wednesday afternoon to lobby them and to pass the voting measure called the Save America Act, his top legislative priority. The act would require a photo ID to vote in federal elections and proof of U.S. citizenship to register, while compelling states to turn over their voter registration rolls to the federal government. Today's housing news conference and signing is hereby canceled until such time as we pass the desperately needed Save America Act, which I consider to be a national emergency, Trump wrote in a social media post. Some Republicans indicated it may be a largely symbolic gesture. It can become law anyway if the president has not signed within 10 days, and lawmakers believe they have enough votes to overcome a presidential veto. But Trump's determination may not be enough. The Republicans control 53 of the Senate's 100 seats. They lack the 60 votes needed to meet the chamber's filibuster threshold for most bills, which accounts for 5 failed votes on the measure or its provisions since mid-March. Hard realities. Republicans say they also do not have enough votes to meet Trump's repeated demands to eliminate the filibuster and pass the bill with a simple majority. Those are just hard realities, and I think at some point we have to come to grips with that, Senate Majority Leader John Thune told reporters in what may be a preview of his conference's message to Trump. Senate Republicans also rejected Trump's call for other hardball tactics, such as attaching the Save America Act to must-pass legislation or firing a Senate official who blocked it from a recent spending package. Backers of the bill say they should not abandon efforts to pass a top Trump priority. For every bill up here, when it starts, there's not enough votes, said Republican Senator Rick Scott of Florida, a supporter of the legislation who invited Trump to Wednesday's meeting. We're going to have a nice conversation to see if we can figure out how to get this across the finish line. A rare visit. Presidential visits to Congress are rare, and Wednesday's meeting comes at a time when relations between Trump and his party in the Senate are at a low. With less than 5 months until a November midterm election that threatens to end their majority, Senate Republicans have started to resist Trump on some fronts. They forced him to abandon a $1.8 billion anti-weaponization fund and express outrage over his pick of an ally with no intelligence background as the top U.S. intelligence official. On Tuesday, Republican Senators Susie Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Rand Paul, and Bill Cassidy joined Democrats to pass legislation to halt U.S. military actions against Iran. That drew sharp rebuke from Trump on social media. Four Republican losers voted with the Democrats, and Iran asked my people, "What does that all mean?" "These senators have just made my job more difficult, but I will get it done, one way or another, because I always get it done," the president wrote. Critics of the voting legislation, including Senate Democrats, say the bill targets a nearly non-existent problem of non-citizen voting, but would disenfranchise American citizens who do not already have access to a passport or birth certificate. Some Republicans say their efforts could be better spent on other issues. "Every minute we spend on it, we're not spending it on something that can get my colleagues reelected," Senator Tom Tillis, a Republican from North Carolina, told reporters. In other government and politic news, we have an alert top story. Recreation. Shenandoah Rail Crossing could help close Route 66 trail gap, by Matus Janique, 18 hours ago. Manny Hernandez is on the left of this picture, and Bill Wasson is in the center, and Shenandoah Mayor David Shane talked Thursday, June the 18th, 2026, near the old Route 66 rail crossing in Shenandoah. Shenandoah, a long-sought trail rail crossing along the old 66 in Shenandoah, is expected to help connect pieces of the Route 66 bike and pedestrian path, improve access to local parks, and bring trail users closer to downtown. The project would create an improved at-grade crossing for a multi-use path over Toledo, Peoria, and Western Railway tracks on the west side of old Route 66. It's one of the latest pieces in a broader effort to extend the Constitution Trail and Route 66 Trail Network north through McLean County. The Illinois Commerce Commission approved the crossing plan May the 7th. Trail advocates have said they hope the work can be completed this fall. ICC records list the estimated cost of the railway's portion of the crossing surface work at $397,874, with the Illinois Department of Transportation's participation capped at $400,000. That figure does not appear to include every related trail or drainage costs. Plans call for reusing and extending the existing concrete crossing pad through the new bike and pedestrian path. The crossing is expected to include signs, pavement markings, detectable warnings, stop bars, and bollards. The plan does not describe the type of high-speed rail crossing improvements seen elsewhere in Illinois, such as a four-quadrant gates, pedestrian gates, or fencing. An ICC exhibit says the existing railroad flasher and bell are not to be disturbed. McLean County is responsible for the path approaches, sign, and pavement markings. The County Highway Department has also installed new drainage in the area, including a culvert connecting Shenoa. For Mayor David Shane, the crossing is part of a larger vision for creating a connected trail system that runs through town, links parks, and gives residents and visitors another reason to spend time in Shenoa. It's basically an extension of the Constitution Trail, Shane said, referring to the linear path park systems spanning Bloomington Normal. When we get it all done, we'll actually be having a trail from the southern boundary of McLean County to the Livingston County line up here. Shane said Shenoa already has a bike trail along part of Old Route 66, which was originally developed after funding became available for shovel-ready projects more than a decade ago. The next step, he said, is connecting the trail more fully with other parts of town. The plan is to create a loop that would run from Union Pacific area along U.S. Route 24 to Old Route 66, giving residents a route of about 2 miles to walk, bike, or run around Shenoa. The crossing project comes as communities along Route 66 prepare for continued interest tied to the historic highway's centennial this year. In Shenoa, Shane said traffic from Route 66 travelers is readily noticeable. I actually farm along Route 66 here north of town, and the groups of people you see coming through here is astonishing to me, Shane said. The number of motorcycle groups from Europe that come here, ship their bikes over here, and want to go on the Mother Road from Chicago to LA. Shane said the city is trying to build on that interest by improving downtown and giving travelers more reasons to stop. He pointed to the opening day of the Dairy Queen, downtown redevelopment work, and Shenoa's 4th of July festivities as examples of local attractions. Shane added that signage remains one area where the city needs improvement, especially to direct visitors from Route 66 toward restaurants, downtown businesses, and other local shops. Expanding outdoor fitness safely. Manny Hernandez with Shenoa's Parks Department said the trail already has become more active after cleanup and improvements on the south end. He said residents are walking, biking, and running the route more often, and the Shenoa Fitness Center has used the trail for Saturday boot camps. Now you can actually see more people enjoying the whole trail, Hernandez said. Hernandez said the trail improvements are also about safety. A completed connection would give cyclists and pedestrians a safer route away from vehicle traffic on Route 66. He said a new crosswalk and warning signs have been added in recently paved areas. With this new tie-in, you would keep the bike and pedestrians away from 66, Hernandez said. The city has also added amenities near the trail, including a pavilion at Sunset Park with benches, a water fountain, and bike repair station. Hernandez said a map is expected to be added with Route 66 information and tourist spots in Shenoa. Shane also noted that the city has added a dog park that local officials have promoted as Route 66 attraction. Bill Wasson, vice president of Friends of the Constitution Trail, said the Shenoa Crossing is one of the larger pieces of effort to turn old, unused Route 66 pavement into a safer and more inviting greenway corridor. It takes kind of a banded right-of-way roadway that's not appealing in any of those communities, and it turns it into a greenway corridor that provides opportunities for recreation, transportation, and for the residents of each community, Wasson said. The trail also creates tourism opportunities, especially for smaller communities along Route 66 that lost traffic when Interstate 55 opened. Long road to improvement along Route 66. Wasson said Shenoa has worked for years to get a crossing approved with help from McLean County, the county administrator's office, and the state's attorney's office, as well as the county highway department. The project itself is the responsibility of the Illinois Department of Transportation in cooperation with the railroad, Wasson said. Lots of partners involved in this project. Watson said the funding is in place for the crossing work, and the hope remains that the project can be completed this fall. As far as I know, we're all keeping our fingers crossed, Watson said. When finished, the crossing area will be paved. The trail will curve closer to the road so there can be one continuous crossing and then swing back toward the line of trees on the opposite side. Friends of the Constitution Trail have also been working to improve the Route 66 corridor through tree planting. Wasson said more than 300 trees have been planted in Shenoa alone, and more than 800 have been planted over the past 5 or 6 years in communities including Shenoa, Lexington, Funk's Grove, and McLean. The trees will need time to grow anyway, so there's no better time to plant a tree than today, Watson said. Hernandez said he hopes that the trees eventually create a shaded corridor that draws more people outside. Once it's beautiful and attractive, I'm sure people are going to want to come out and enjoy it, Hernandez says. I want to see them big and just like a corridor, but nothing but shade. For Shane, the trail crossing is tied to a broader effort to make Shenoa a place where both residents and visitors want to spend time. He said downtown has struggled over the years because of the disinvestment, fires, and deteriorating buildings, but he pointed to ongoing redevelopment work as a sign of momentum. Shane said the trail, Route 66 traffic, and downtown redevelopment can work together. For residents, he said the crossing means another place to walk, bike, and connect to parks. While visitors, it's another reason to slow down and see Shenoa rather than pass through. Moving on now to some crime and court news. 7 years for unborn child's death by Caitlin Klepek 3 hours ago. Bloomington, a man from Normal, has been sentenced to 7 years in prison after he pleaded guilty to the felony offense of voluntary manslaughter of an unborn child. Emerson L. Evans, 32, was charged in August of 2025 with 2 counts of intentional homicide of an unborn child, a Class M felony. The prosecution later added an additional count for the same offense, as well as aggravated battery of a pregnant person, a Class 3 felony, and voluntary manslaughter of an unborn child, a Class 1 felony. Evans was accused of placing 3 mifepristone pills inside a pregnant woman without her consent, which led to a miscarriage when she was 7 weeks pregnant, prosecutors previously said. Mifepristone is typically prescribed to take as a single oral dose in combination with misoprostol, officials said. Evans was detained August the 25th of 2025. He appealed the judge's decision to deny his pretrial release in May, but the appellate justices upheld the trial's court ruling to detain Evans. On June the 4th, Evans appeared before Judge Jason Chambers and pleaded guilty to the Class 1 felony offense of voluntary manslaughter to the unborn child as part of a plea agreement with the state. As part of this plea agreement, Assistant State's Attorney Ashley Scarborough dismissed Evans' remaining 4 charges. Chambers sentenced Evan to 7 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections to be served at 50% and followed by 1 year of mandatory supervised release. He earned a credit for 285 days already served. Michael Mullen represented Evans at his plea hearing, appearing on behalf of Evans's attorney Joseph Moran, according to court records. Moving on now to other crime and court news, we have a top story spotlight. Bloomington man charged in nationwide fraud investigation, Illinois State's Attorney General says, by Caitlin Klepek, 20 hours ago. Chicago. A Bloomington man has been charged alongside 16 others accused of stealing state funds, Illinois Attorney General Kwame Rule announced this week. These charges are part of a coordinated, nationwide law enforcement action that resulted in charges against 455 defendants across the country, including 90 doctors and other licensed medical professionals for their alleged participation in healthcare fraud and opioid abuse schemes involving over $6.5 billion in false claims and significant patient harm, according to a news release from the Attorney General's office released Tuesday. The investigation involved Medicaid and other programs that provide crucial services to the state's most vulnerable residents, according to the news release. Thomas W. Downing, 37, of Bloomington, is charged with one count of vendor fraud, one count of theft, and one count of forgery. Raul accuses Downing of submitting false timesheets to receive payments for personal services he did not render, and submitting false claims to Illinois Department of Human Services for services that are provided under the Home Services Program. Raul's Medicaid Fraud Control Unit investigated and is prosecuting the Illinois 17 cases. We will not tolerate abuses of these life-saving programs, Raul said. I remain committed to combating fraud as my office continues our long-standing collaboration with federal and state local law enforcement, partners to hold those who would steal from the public accountable. A booking photo for Downing was not available. How time flies. 100 years ago, on this date in 1926, Bloomington streets are to be marked. Agitation of many years in behalf of the proper posting of the names of our thoroughfares will at last be found to have been borne fruit. The order has been placed for 969 signs and 512 supporting posts, as well as the installation, which will commence next week. 75 years ago, on today, June 25th of 1951, a fire set by lightning caused damage estimated from $5,000 to $7,000 to the Cook Hall Radio Studios at Illinois State University on June 24th. The lightning struck the Old Castle Tower, which houses the studio, at about 2:30 a.m., and burned for nearly 2 hours before it was discovered by night watchman Frank Janik about 4:30 a.m. 50 years ago, on June 25th of 1976, ground was broken for Bloomington's $2.6 million library. On June the 25th, stakes and strings outline the places where rooms will replace grass. 25 years ago, on June the 25th of 2001, coming together is a beginning. Keeping together is a process, and working together is success. That Henry Ford quote is one Unit 5 Superintendent's Bob Melito uses to define his tenure in the district he has led since 1990. For the 11 years, we have worked together for Unit 5, he said, crediting school board members, teachers, families, and the community at large for that success. This week will be Melito's last week in Unit 5. Next month, he'll begin a new assignment when he moves to Township High School, District 211 in Palatine. Thank you so much for listening with me today. My name is Kayla Verhoeven, and until we do part two of the Pantograph, have a good day, friends.